Americans, I'm Paul Harvey. You know what the news is. In half a minute, you're going to hear the rest of the story.
Welcome to the dime that starts with you.
Me?
When it comes to banking, there's more than one dime in New York. But when it comes to personal attention, remember our dime, Union Dime, the dime that starts with you. Our name starts with you, and we make banking start with you. Everything we do at Union Dime Savings Bank is for your benefit.
I'm sure glad I bank at the dime that starts with me.
Union Dime, the dime that starts with you.
Member FDIC.
Gordon said the doggondest thing. He said now that he'd been abandoned at the age of 6 months, had been left on the doorstep of an orphanage. His name was Gordon Kelly. Well, those who knew Gordon were rather surprised when he said this, because Gordon had always seemed so confident and so secure, so unlike the popular prototype of the once abandoned child. And yet Gordon did say the darndest thing. He said that he'd been adopted by an itinerant preacher, had been reared in Canada by that preacher and his wife, believing all the while that they were his true parents, and only at the age of 13 did he learn differently. And the bitterness which followed stayed with him for many years. Gordon's closest friends were a little bewildered when he said this, for Gordon had always seemed so unbitter, so generally at peace with himself. And yet, Gordon said the darndest thing. He said that from the moment he learned he was to be adopted, he felt like a lost prince. And from then on, he said, he eagerly awaited the day when a big car would pull up in front of his house and take him back to his rightful kingdom. Now, the knowledge that his real parents were out there somewhere inspired an endless stream of fantasies about them. He imagined, for example, that they were surely rich, and they were powerful and successful, and when he was finally returned to them, his young life would be complete. Those who were acquainted with Gordon in later years could hardly believe this, because Gordon had always seemed so realistic, so down to earth, so unlike the product of a fantasy-ridden childhood. And yet Gordon said the darndest thing. He said that he began an intensive search for his natural parents, and the search lasted for 18 years. And then, at the age of 31, Gordon came to the end of that long search, and he learned the names of his real parents, and he discovered where they lived, and he knew what they did. But what happened next is the darndest thing of all. In a moment, the rest of the story.
At election time, the politicians will tell you that crime is a serious problem. The politicians get elected, and crime gets worse. This November, we have a chance to make a change. This year, we can elect a professional prosecutor, not a politician, as District Attorney of Queens. That professional is Maurice Najari, the state's most experienced and successful prosecutor. On Election Day, vote for Maurice Najari for District Attorney of Queens.
Paid for by Najari for a District Attorney Committee.
Now, I had told you that at long last, Gordon had discovered who his real parents were, where they lived and everything. He was age 31 when he found this out. Now he's on the brink of meeting them face to face for the first time. And that's when Gordon did the darndest thing of all. He backed away. Because in the end, he says, he realized, after all of the wondering and searching for 18 years, after searching most of his lifetime up to then for his real parents, he figured it was best to leave things as they were for him and for them. So, Gordon knows from whence he came. That search is over. The conflict is finished. The bitterness has died away. It's died away almost, for Gordon still believes that parents should give up their children for adoption only under the most extreme circumstances, that a child's better off with his own parents almost always, he says. So those who know Gordon today understand him just a little bit better, his lifelong interest in child psychology, his fascination with children's motivation. Now his life begins to make ultimate sense. You see, Gordon is perhaps best known for a television feature he created and for a book he wrote by the same name, a book called Kids Say the Darndest Things. For Gordon Kelly was the name given him at birth. He now bears the name of the preacher who adopted him. Linkletter. Gordon Kelly is Art Linkletter. And now you know the rest of the story.
G. Marshall. Learn to do well. Seek judgment. Relieve the oppressed. Help the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Such excellent advice from the prophet Isaiah. So simple to understand. So fulfilling to follow. So, why aren't more people doing it?
Your Majesty, the people are waiting to hear your immortal words of wisdom.
Mother, I can't think of any at the moment.
That is not acceptable. I'm sorry. The people won't like it.
I'm not prepared to make a judgment.
Then there's only one thing you can do.
Yes? Tell me. What is it? Tell me.
No. You're not quite ready for it. Not just yet.
Our mystery drama, The Final Judgment, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Gordon Heath. It is sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Introducing the new Century, a Buick like you've never seen before.
A little science.
The fastback design is pure function. Ah, but the execution is pure Buick.
A little magic.
The trim new Century has a new design, a new size.
A little science.
Yet inside, there's more head and leg room than last year.
A little magic.
Say, that wouldn't be the new Buick Century, would it?
Yes, sir, that's it.
Boy, it looks so good, I can't believe it.
Yes, sir.
And all that room and luxury in there. I mean, it's hard to believe, you know?
Yes, sir.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
How'd you guys do it anyway?
Sir, you'd never believe it.
They surely will astound you. The amazing things you see. The cars they've built, so wonderful. How can such things see?
A little science.
A little magic.
A little science.
A little magic.
Has an old familiar ring. Where does a mother go for the best of everything? What's for dinner? The family wants to know. Who's got the answers? Who's got the most to show? ShopRite has. ShopRite has.
ShopRite has a harvest of savings for your fall food needs. Boneless choice grade beef roasts, bottom round or shoulder, just 99 cents a pound. Top round or sirloin tip roasts, $1.09 a pound. Save and Banquet frozen buffet suppers, 2-pound package, just 99 cents. And golden ripe bananas are just 19 cents a pound. There's a lot more for a little less at ShopRite, so why pay more?
ShopRite has.
At the turn of the century, the Grossinger family arrived in the New World with their old world family recipe for rye bread, which has since delighted guests at Grossinger's Catskill Resort, as well as the general public. Almost 500 million loaves of Grossinger's bread have been consumed by satisfied customers. The bakers of Grossinger's allow no compromise. They use only the finest pure kosher ingredients, the highest protein flour available, and only nature's healthful artesian well water in Grossinger's bread. No city water, no chemical preservatives or cholesterol. Baked longer than ordinary rye in an open hearth oven, the bottom is coated with fresh cornmeal for that unique toasted flavor. Grossinger's rye bread, with seeds or without, from the people you can bank on to bake the very best. Grossinger's, it's the taste that tells.
There is no new thing under the sun, or so it says in that part of the great book which is called Ecclesiastes, or the Preacher. And since many believe that the preacher was King Solomon himself, we thus have another example of his enduring wisdom. For what indeed can ever be new under the sun? The works of man, perhaps, his machines, his buildings, his weapons. But man himself? No. Nothing has changed since Solomon's day. And to prove it, here is a tale told by the preacher about himself. Not about a Solomon who was rich in years and wisdom, but of a younger Solomon who was filled with vanity.
For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth.
My son.
Oh, mother?
I thought I would find you here.
And why not? This is my chamber.
You should be at the council chamber.
Where was I? The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in the land.
I've just come from the council. Did you hear me?
I'm sure all Israel has heard you, dearest mother. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and its vines are in blossom.
And what are you doing?
I'm writing poetry.
Poetry? How can you write poetry? There's going to be a war.
We can have war any time we please. But poetry, only when the inspiration comes.
Jeroboam is raising an army. He claims the throne.
I must ask you a very important question, Mother.
Yes?
Don't spare my feelings. How does this poem compare with, well, in your opinion, with what my father has written?
Is that what you want to ask me?
I know my father David was called the sweet singer in Israel. But with this poem...
Listen to me. The council is waiting. You're a grown man now, with your own sons and daughters and wives.
Obviously, Mother, you don't think much of my poem.
Is this a time to be mooning over verses?
Now, of course, it's difficult when one is compared to one's father.
This is a serious business. You're a grown man with children.
Yes, I know, with my own sons, daughters, wives.
Yes. And you have your wives, most of them, to thank for your troubles.
Dear Mother, I never have trouble with my wives. There's no household in the land more peaceful than mine.
Every man is entitled to one wife. Some may manage two. Even three is not an unreasonable number. But you...
Ah, Mother, Mother.
The people are angry because you marry foreign women.
Mother, you know as well as I do that each of them strengthens us with a foreign alliance.
And weakens us with a foreign idol in the temple.
No one takes that seriously.
The council is worried. And one thing you must never do is allow counselors to sit and brood. Because then each man begins quietly to flirt with treason. Your father would move decisively.
If you're going back to the council room, tell them I shall be there. They'll just have to wait till I'm finished.
Finished? With what now?
I'm going to the courtyard.
What for?
This is the time when I dispense justice.
Are you serious?
Of course I'm serious. You must admit I have acquired a reputation for dispensing justice.
My poor boy. You're mad.
Down there, in that courtyard, is my military strategy. People may rebel against a king, but never against a judge. Especially one who seems to speak with the vision and the wisdom of the Lord.
But I still...
I know what you want. You would wish me to place myself at the head of 10,000 armed men and slaughter this Jeroboam and his rabble.
That's what your father would do.
But I'm not my father. I didn't kill Goliath. I never had to fight for my life against wild beasts or bloodthirsty brigands. I was never a shepherd, a hunter, a soldier. I was born in luxury, raised with riches. I must fight in my own way. And, Mother, as long as the people believe that through my mouth flows the wisdom of the Lord, we need not trouble our heads about Jeroboam or any other pretender to the throne.
But the council is frightened.
I'm not frightened. I look at my mother, Bathsheba. Bathsheba, this prim and proper middle-aged lady. I look for a trace of the ravishingly beautiful 17-year-old Bathsheba, for whom my father, David, had defied the Lord's holiest commandments. What has happened to you, Bathsheba? Where have you gone? The exquisite maiden has become the exacting matron. That breathtaking, heart-stopping beauty has been replaced by a sharp, deadly intelligence and cunning. Or were they always there? She never tires of telling me that I am king of Israel, thanks to her artfulness and strategy. What she doesn't seem to understand is that getting the crown was not nearly as difficult as keeping it. And the only way I can keep it is to dispense justice.
Justice! I demand justice! I have a right to justice!
I will have justice!
Speak one at a time.
Oh, King, live forever. I am the victim of a plot.
Immortal King, one of these two or both of them have robbed me.
King of kings, punish the thief.
They lie. Listen to the truth.
I am innocent.
I have been robbed.
You know how it all began. With those two women and the baby. When I was called to judge between the two women and the infant, I was so completely puzzled that finally in anger I shouted, "Give them each half of the baby," without even thinking. And no sooner were those words out of my mouth than my heart almost stopped. What if they take me seriously? What if both women are too stubborn to give in? Women. They were hardly more than children themselves. Two poverty-stricken little prostitutes starving in a miserable hovel. And yet, one of them rose to heights of nobility unmatched by any queen. How well it ended. And it was the making of me as a judge.
Your Majesty!
Mighty King!
Emperor of the world!
First, we must dispense with all of that. I am Solomon, son of David. And by sufferance of the Lord, I preside over his people, Israel. Which of you is the oldest? Raise your hand. What is your name?
I am Joseph, son of Aaron, son of Simeon, son of Kish, son of Judah.
I dare say you could take us back to our father Abraham himself. On a more contemporary theme, what is your grievance?
Your Majesty, the tale is quickly told.
And you are?
Abiel, son of Asher. We three, myself and these two villains.
Whom do you call a villain?
And what do you call yourself?
I am Benjamin, son of Zebulun.
So, here we have Joseph, Abiel, and Benjamin. Proceed. Tell the tale without adornment.
We met at the caravansary in Damascus.
The one near the eastern gate of the city.
It was an evil day.
Each of us had sold his goods in the city.
We were returning home to Jerusalem.
Each of us had money.
For protection, we decided to travel together.
We three strangers.
We marched together during the day.
At night, we made camp.
To protect the money, we put it all together in one purse. My 200 silver coins.
My 10 diamonds.
My 100 gold pieces. And we would bury it in a hiding place.
Lest we should be surprised at night by bandits.
Foolishly, I trusted these.
We must get all the facts first. Each night, then, you buried the money, and each of you knew the hiding place.
We did the deed together.
It was the only way.
Each of us knew.
And each morning, you would dig it up again. Continue.
And so it went, for all the days and nights of the journey from Damascus.
But last night, we were 12 miles from the gates of Jerusalem.
It was late. We were tired.
We made camp for the last time.
We dug a hole beneath a carrot
tree. We hid the treasure as usual.
This morning, it was gone.
Which means that one of these two
or two have banded together to steal.
I have been robbed.
Silence! The money, the diamonds, were gone, you say.
Everything had been placed into a purse. And the purse and everything in it has disappeared.
The hole was empty.
One of them must have stolen it.
What did you do when you discovered the purse was gone?
Well, there were words. Angry words.
I can well imagine.
We came to blows.
I can see that.
Each of us accused the other.
Each let the other two search him and all the possessions, but
there was no trace of the purse. I see. Then we must assume that last night, when all three of you were supposed to be deep in slumber, one of you was awake.
Yes, one of them.
That's the way it happened.
And that one, making sure the others were fast asleep, went to the hiding place, removed the purse, hid it somewhere, and returned to his place by the fire.
That's exactly how it was.
That's what the thief did.
That's what one of them did.
Joseph, did you wake up during the night?
No, Your Majesty.
You, Abiel. Did you get up last night?
No, Your Majesty.
Benjamin, did you sleep during the night?
I did, Your Majesty.
Did any of you see anything? Hear anything? One of you stole that purse. So, was it you, Joseph?
No, Your Majesty.
Was it you, Abiel?
I swear to you, Your Majesty, I'm innocent.
And you, Benjamin? Are you the man?
No. No, Your Majesty.
One of you is lying. This was the moment. Dramatic moment that everyone was waiting for. Three men had told a story. Each was a respectable and honest-looking person, and yet one of them was a liar. A liar and a thief. To see through the lie was beyond the capability of the average person, but I was Solomon. Solomon the king, Solomon the great judge. I would see through the sham and falsehood. I would reach out and touch the core of truth, because I was guided by the Lord. There was a hush. No one spoke. They waited for me to rise and point to the culprit. They waited for the awful bolt of lightning to strike, and so did I. I waited for the flash of insight. I waited for the sudden revelation. But it didn't come. I knew what I had to do. I rose from my chair. I gazed into each man's face. I needed time. Joseph, raise your hand and swear you are innocent.
I swear I am innocent, Your Majesty.
Abiel, swear you are innocent.
I swear, Your Majesty.
Benjamin, I swear I'm innocent.
I swear I'm innocent.
One of you is guilty. And that one is...
Can we be expected to build up to a line like that and not use it for a first act curtain? Obviously, one of them is guilty. But does Solomon know? I'll tell you this much now. Solomon will solve it, but only on the basis of what is revealed in open court. Do you think you'll be able to solve it too? You'll be fed all the pertinent data, beginning with Act Two.
I guess I'm lucky. My family's always been healthy. Oh, a touch of constipation now and then, but we've got X-Lax for that.
Today, more American families trust X-Lax than any other brand. When you need a laxative, you can count on X-Lax for relief in the morning, for occasional use only as directed.
Why X-Lax? My family trusts it. That's why.
Now, you can relieve the misery of itching fast. Bicozine Cream has the fastest anti-itch drug you can buy without a doctor's prescription. Use only as directed. Get Bicozine.
Sir, I want to buy a comfortable chair.
Fine, Mr. Magoo, that would be a Lazy Boy.
It has to be rugged enough for me and soft enough for Mother Magoo.
It's called a Lazy Boy Recliner Rocker.
It starts with smooth reclining action.
It's called a Lazy Boy Recliner Rocker.
Ha ha, chair like this one.
Sir, you are sitting in a Lazy Boy Recliner.
Yes, a Lazy Boy, the world's finest chair. Anyone can see that. Oh, by George, this is chair comfort. I'll take it.
Start thinking straight. Start thinking White Castle straight. White Castle burgers are so straight, we even make them square. A different burger with a different taste, day and night, everywhere. Start thinking straight. Get straight to White Castle. See you there.
White Castle makes a different burger with a different shape and cooks it a different way to give it that different taste. Why, without White Castle, there wouldn't be people thinking straight about that straight square burger served steaming hot in its own natural juices. Without White Castle, all hamburgers would taste the same. Why, without White Castle, I might only be the announcer for a travelogue about wild wolverines. And what's a wolverine?
Start thinking straight. White Castle, put a different taste on your plate. Bring the whole family straight inside and have a meal to share.
This is Joe DiMaggio. Will you have to be rich to send your children to college? Not if you have the Bowery's College Education Plan. This 16-page book gives you a cram course in future college costs, and it tells how the Bowery can help you solve this financial problem. Here are the details.
The Bowery Education book tells why college costs so much and why it may double in the next decade. Why you can't depend on scholarships, but now you can get education money with the Bowery's four-point education plan. The Bowery's new plan consists of a new high-interest savings account especially designed to help families save for college, a tax savings gift to minors option, which would give you sizable tax benefits, a discount education loan for depositors in the Bowery's education savings account, tuition insurance so your child can continue college in the event of death in the family. You get all this vital information plus a geographical guide to colleges, their enrollment and costs. Get your free college education book from the Bowery Savings Bank, member FDIC.
The Mark of Cain, the brand of the thief. By these, we are supposed to know the transgressor. However, that type of insignia used to be put on after the criminal had been exposed. So how do you recognize the wrongdoer before he has been brought to justice? This is a story about King Solomon. He's faced with just that problem.
One of you is lying. One of you is the thief. And that one is the man who shall suffer the full penalty of the law.
They were waiting. The crowd was waiting for me to point to Joseph or Abiel or Benjamin to proclaim, "Behold, he is the one." That's what was expected. That is why they gather in their thousands in the courtyard of the palace. Why princes and philosophers, scholars and sages join the vast horde of common people. Why they come from all over the world to watch the Hebrew king dispense justice. I look at the faces of Joseph, Abiel, Benjamin. I search each man's countenance for a sign. But they look equally innocent or equally guilty. I wait for that sudden flash of insight. It has never before failed me. I wait. But this time it doesn't come. I knew I must do something.
Captain of the guard.
Sire.
See that these three remain here on the spot. My people, your king and your judge retires to pray for guidance.
Solomon.
Mother, I cannot come to the council chamber now.
I understand. You have trapped yourself.
What do you say?
You have become the prisoner of your own reputation.
I know.
These three. By now, news of their litigation is traveling all through the land. And everyone awaits the judgment of Solomon.
Mother, it is not necessary to remind me.
But it is. Listen to the words of Jeroboam. Listen to what he says. Are we not a simple, God-fearing people, farmers, craftsmen, shepherds? What is this foreign luxury that eats away at our substance? And the people listen.
He is wrong. We are not a simple people. We're a great people.
Does it matter? Your strongest claim to the throne is your ability to dispense divine justice. Well, dispense it. The people are waiting.
I know they're waiting.
The one thing you cannot do is keep them waiting. I know. I've been wife to a king and mother to a king. A king must do what his people expect of him. And from you, they expect...
I know what they expect. Judgment.
Then give them a judgment.
I've been unable to find...
Then come up with something clever.
Mother, you cannot command inspiration.
Well, then what are you going to do?
I'll think of something.
I've already thought of something.
What is it? Well, tell me.
No. I don't think you're ready for it. Just yet.
I sent confidential agents through the city. They investigated Joseph, Abiel, Benjamin. What kind of reputation did each man have? Spotless, it turned out. What did their friends, neighbors,
even enemies, think. Each was a man of unblemished character. Each was honest, hardworking, trustworthy. I spoke to each man in private.
I trade in spices, Your Majesty.
Yes, Joseph.
I'm a poor man.
Poor? You own a large house, land. You have servants.
But I'm poor because I have no sons. There will be no one to carry on my name.
But surely one of the women in your household...
The Lord has not seen fit to answer my prayers.
They say you plan a journey to Canaan.
Well, yes, Your Majesty, I had thought about it.
To the city of Gaza.
We are at peace, Your Majesty. We trade.
In Gaza is the temple to the pagan goddess Ashtaroth. Are you aware of it?
I know they worship her.
Ashtaroth, the goddess of fertility. Had you planned to visit her temple?
Your Majesty, why would I... Why?
These things are not unknown, are they? When all else fails, there are those who pray to idols.
But, Your Majesty, I am not one who it's an abomination.
And an expensive one at that. The altar of Ashtaroth, I am told, must be piled high with gold and silver and diamonds. The rumor among your neighbors is that you are taking your wife on a trading journey.
Well, she has kinfolk along the way in Jabesh.
I see. That is all for now, Joseph. They are all three... honest men, Mother.
Oh, perhaps none of them has ever been caught doing anything wrong.
We must be calm.
To lose the throne because of a petty quarrel among merchants.
It's not a petty quarrel to them. Besides, who says I'm going to lose the crown?
You said it yourself. Justice is the cement that keeps together the walls of your palace.
I will find the thief and pass judgment.
What if there is no thief?
What if there is no thief?
And no gold, no silver, no diamonds, no robbery. And they did not come from Damascus.
I don't understand.
What if these three are partisans of Jeroboam, and this is a part of a plot to discredit you?
But they have been to Damascus, and they did sell goods, and they did have money. I have made inquiries. I will find the thief.
I am a weaver of cloth, Your Majesty.
And you brought your wares to the marketplace in Damascus, have you?
Yes, Your Majesty.
And you sold all of your goods?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Had you done well, have you?
Very well.
You were returning home, then, with 200 silver coins?
Yes.
There are those who say your wares were worth considerably more. And yet, you just told me you had done well.
Well... when one makes a long and hazardous journey to a foreign land and returns home alive, well, it can be said he did well.
But not financially.
There was more cloth than people wanted.
Which means you sold yours at a loss.
Yes.
Which means you are in debt.
Yes.
Were you tempted by Joseph's gold and Benjamin's diamonds?
No!
That is all. For now, Abiel.
Shall I tell you what might be the cream of the jest?
Mother, I am not aware that anything is funny here.
Oh, it's possible that all of them are innocent.
How is it possible?
Oh, consider the story. They decided to stop for the night.
Yes.
They had halted by a carob tree.
We know that.
A thief could have been concealed in the branches. He could have seen them bury the purse. He could have waited till they fell asleep.
No.
Why not?
The tree was dead. It had no foliage.
Then there is only one thing left for you to do.
What do you suggest?
I say you must...
Yes?
No. You're not quite ready for it. Not just yet.
You are a dealer in precious stones, Benjamin.
Yes, Your Majesty.
And you had journeyed to Damascus to buy or sell?
To buy, Your Majesty.
Was your trip successful?
Very successful.
These 10 precious stones, they were the object of your trip?
Yes.
At this point, they represent your entire fortune.
Well...
When did you discover that the diamonds were false?
Your Majesty, I don't understand what...
Do you deny it?
I am an expert in precious stones. No one could fool me. I would know a false diamond.
Of course. No one doubts your expertise. Only your common sense. The diamonds you bought were real enough. But the ones that were given to you carefully wrapped in a soft cloth.
How did your Majesty know?
Your misadventure is now a well-known joke in a certain section of the bazaar in Damascus. Somewhere along the journey, you happened to examine the diamonds a bit more carefully than usual.
But I...
You are a ruined man.
Yes. But I'm not a thief.
That is all. For now, Benjamin.
They say the Lord no longer speaks through Solomon.
I hear that too.
They wait for your judgment.
I'm aware of it, Mother.
And not just here at the palace. All Jerusalem waits. From the deserts of the Negev to the mountains of Galilee, all are waiting for the great judgment from the great judge.
I'm doing my best. One of them is guilty, but which one?
It doesn't matter. Any one of them will do.
Oh, no. Only the one who is guilty.
If you must have the guilty one, then do it the way these things are done among civilized people.
I don't understand, Mother.
Let me suggest a way. Let us conveniently discover a sack. It will contain Joseph's 100 gold pieces, Abiel's 200 silver coins, and Benjamin's 10 diamonds.
Mother!
Choose the one who pleases you least. He will be the thief. Punish him as you see fit. The other two will be satisfied. The mob will have its judgment. The throne will be safe again. You don't care for the idea?
No.
You are repelled by the, shall we say, the immorality of it.
Immorality? I remember what I did to get the throne.
What I did?
What I permitted you to do for me. No king is without blood on his hands. Not my father, David, nor Saul before him.
There are things you must do to win the crown. And there are things you must do to make sure the crown remains on your head.
I understand that, Mother.
Now, we know the contents of the purse. 100 pieces of gold, 200 silver coins, 10 diamonds. And now we must determine the look of the purse itself. Solomon.
Yes?
Are you listening to me?
Yes, I'm listening.
There are certain things that kings do.
We know that those in power can usually justify anything they do in the name of some higher morality or some greater good. But Solomon? Well, one thing you have to remember about many of those biblical kings, they were human. Oh, how intensely human. How human, we shall see shortly when I bring you face to face with Act 3.
Now True Value Hardware Stores are offering a Master Mechanic 8-piece screwdriver set for people who have more than one screw loose. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you. This 8-piece set gives a selection of several different size screwdrivers, including two Phillips heads, to tighten or loosen almost any size screw for every household job. And the whole set, including a handy plastic snap pouch, is just $4.25 at True Value Hardware Stores. Mechanics who have more than one nut to deal with can choose a Master Mechanic wrench set. Choose either the 5-piece combination set with box ends and open ends, or choose the 5-piece set with 10 differently sized open ends. Both sets are just $8.88 each. So depending on whether you have a few screws loose or several nuts to deal with, get the Master Mechanic 8-piece screwdriver set for just $4.25, or the Master Mechanic wrench set for just $8.88, exclusively at participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Centers. More than just a name, it's their way of doing business.
You are the prisoner of your reputation, said the Queen Mother Bathsheba to her son King Solomon. And what was his reputation? His great ability? Today, we would call it instant wisdom. It was as if he were divinely inspired to see through the maze of confusion into the heart of a problem. The trouble with being able to create miracles is that after a while, people expect you to do it all the time.
All three of them had a motive. All three of them could have used the contents of the purse.
Then decide among them.
They are entitled to justice.
Oh, we're back to that.
We never left it.
Jeroboam grows stronger every day.
I will find the guilty man.
How?
I will find him.
I summoned the three of them before me again. I questioned them at length, in detail. There was nothing I didn't know now about their lives, their thoughts. But the basic mystery still eluded me. Which one was the thief? Obviously, they were all honest to begin with. But each now felt a desperate need for more money. Under these circumstances, any man can break down. Any honest man can suddenly desert the path of morality. I kept asking more and more questions. The three of you were strangers in Damascus. Whose idea was it to return to Jerusalem together?
It was mine.
Yours, Joseph?
Yes, Your Majesty. I felt there would be safety in numbers.
Whose idea was it to place all the money and diamonds into one purse and bury it for the night?
It was mine, Your Majesty.
Yours, Abiel?
It would be safe from thieves.
The last day of the journey, you were only 12 miles from Jerusalem. Whose idea was it to camp for the night?
It was mine, Your Majesty.
Yours, Benjamin.
The thieves are always thickest right outside the city gates. We would be overtaken by darkness.
The more I spoke to them, the more it became apparent that a case could be built against any one of them.
You must deliver a judgment.
I must know who is guilty.
You are the king. You decide innocence or guilt.
I have always taken pride in my ability to arrive at the truth.
Oh, I see.
What is it you think you see?
You are determined to arrive at the truth.
Of course.
Not the truth for its own sake, or because the Lord demands it, but because you're proud of your ability to do it.
Well,
So then the truth becomes not a way of life or a point of morality, but an accomplishment in a class with horsemanship or archery or swordplay.
Mother, I pay you the honor that is due you under the commandment. But are you the proper person to lecture me?
Certainly. Those of us who admit our own shortcomings may preach the best of sermons. And so the judging, it's vanity.
Mother.
You mean it isn't vanity? To stand there, your arms outstretched toward heaven, and speak words that are so wise, so convincing, that the multitude will swear they are divinely inspired? It isn't vanity.
What you're saying is... Is...
Is what? What is your true concern, my son? What sort of life shall you follow? I had no choice. I was a young girl, too beautiful for my own good. I was desired by men of wealth and power. And what is a woman in our world? A vessel, a chattel. But you can choose. What is it that you want? Vanity or justice?
And suddenly, the words formed in front of my eyes. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. The people said I was divinely inspired, but I smiled to myself as if I knew better. I had flattered myself into thinking that the ideas, the thoughts, were my own. No. There is only one judge and one judgment. And I must open my heart and my soul to him. I pray humbly now. O, greatest of all, judge those three men, thy servants. Judge those three men, thy servants. Judge them.
A great weight is lifted from my heart. I go to the courtyard. I am ready to end the case.
Have you decided on the guilty party?
The Lord will make that decision. He will put the right words in my mouth, if I trust in him. And I do. Joseph, Abiel, Benjamin, stand forth. Each of you has presented his case. From all the evidence that has been given and all the facts, any one of you may be the culprit. Before I announce my verdict, I should like to tell you all a story, for it has a bearing on this case. Listen, all. A young man and a young woman fell in love. They wished to marry. However, the young woman said to her lover,
"My beloved, I want us to marry, but several years ago I gave my word to another. We both realized it was a mistake, and we drifted apart. He is gone from the city, but I pledged my word. True, he wouldn't hold me to it. Actually, he might never even know. But I have no right to marry unless he releases me from my vow."
They decided she would have to visit the other man and ask to be released. And she did. She traveled to the distant city where he was living and presented herself at his house.
Leia, come in.
It's been a long time, Joshua. Well,
I have a wife.
I know. I've come here to ask a favor.
What sort of favor?
I promised to marry you. I would like you to release me.
Release you? Why, I deserted you. You're not bound by any...
I made a vow.
But who would know if you broke it? Who would care?
The answer to both questions is the Lord.
Yes, I understand. I release you, Leah. Oh,
thank you, Joshua. I want you to have these.
What are they?
I put them all in a sack. All the gifts you gave me.
Oh, well, no, it's all right.
But many of them are valuable.
You'll keep them.
Joshua, I see this house. It is not the home of a rich man.
Well, it hasn't been a good year. I want you to keep those gifts. They belong to you.
But, Joshua, you're in trouble.
You deserve to be happy. Now let us say no more about it.
She set out for home, and she was so happy that she didn't even notice the bandit until she felt the point of his sword against her throat.
Well, now, that's a heavy sack for a woman to carry. Suppose I lighten your journey and relieve you of its burden.
Please, please, have pity.
Pity? How can I afford to have pity? I'd starve to death.
But in here is everything I have in the world.
Then I'll make sure you won't squander it.
With this sack, with what's inside, my husband-to-be and I can buy a farm. We can enjoy a long, happy life together. Please, how long will it take you to spend what's in the sack?
The way I spend money? A week.
A week of pleasure for you. Is it worth a lifetime of misery for me?
For me, a week can also be a lifetime. My life can be stretched from a gallows tomorrow.
The Lord will remember what you have done for me. The Lord will remember your sins.
Oh, that he will.
But when he makes his judgment, he will also remember that you spared a poor woman her few miserable possessions.
What can I do? I have this weakness for a pretty face. And perhaps it might even be wise to have at least one credit mark in that ledger. Come, little sister. Let's walk to the city together. Some of the other gentlemen of the road might be tempted to take a shorter view of things.
And that, gentlemen, is the end of the story. Did you care for it?
Oh, yes.
Interesting.
Very inspiring.
I will ask each of you a question. Which of the people in the story do you admire the most? Benjamin?
I would say the girl.
Why?
Because she understood the importance of a vow.
Abiel, do you agree?
No.
Why not?
Your Majesty, I admire her former sweetheart for releasing her from her vow. He was most generous. He could have taken back the gifts. Consider he was poor and in debt.
That's well taken. And Joseph, have you an opinion?
Oh, Your Majesty, to me the admirable person is in truth the bandit. He showed great compassion. He could have taken all her possessions. Indeed, he could have also taken the woman and sold her as a slave.
Three of you have appeared before me. Two of you will leave here free men with the valuables that belong to you. I know the guilty man. Captain of the Guard, seize him. If he confesses and tells us where he has hidden the money, we shall imprison him. Otherwise, he shall be executed. Well, Captain, what are you waiting for?
What is he waiting for? Obviously, he's waiting to be told which of the three is guilty. Are you also waiting to be told? Or do you know? Solomon has arrived at his decision. Have you arrived at yours? You know everything he does. Have you decided? Let's compare conclusions.
Captain of the Guard, seize the guilty man.
Which one, Your Majesty?
Why, Joseph. Joseph, of course.
No! No, I swear I'm innocent.
Captain, we will have this man hanged.
No, Your Majesty, save my life. I'll tell you where I hid the purse.
And how did you know Joseph was guilty?
I told a story of a man, a woman, and a thief. Each of the three had done a good deed. Do you follow?
Yes.
Benjamin thought the woman had behaved best. Abiel said that the former sweetheart had shown the most generous heart. And Joseph claimed that the bandit had been the most worthy of praise.
Yes, but what did all that have to do with the case at hand?
Mother, you see, it takes a thief to admire a thief.
As he thinks in his heart, so he is in his deed, said our King Solomon. This and other bits of ancient wisdom are constantly being rediscovered, and today we call it psychology. But as we have been told, as it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. But before we make an end of our story, I must leave for a few minutes. But I shall return.
Take your contact, take it now. Give your cold to contact.
I'm going to change your mind about nighttime cold medicine. Of all major medicines, only one works up to 12 hours against the cloggy cold virus symptoms that keep you awake. Only Contact. One capsule's relief stays with you all through a long night's sleep, no matter what cold virus attacks. Only Contact.
Give your cold to Contact.
Take only as directed.
This has been the story of a judge, of a mighty king who held the power of life and death.
We think of judges as men who determine our fate, which is true. Yet, each of us is a judge. Each of us is constantly being called upon to decide between right and wrong, good and evil. Thus, the sum of our lives is a judgment. And thus, in our hearts, none of us need be in suspense concerning the verdict. Our cast included Gordon Heath, Bryna Rayburn, Ralph Bell, Nat Pullen, and Roger DeCohen. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
She said, Aylmer, I know not what may be the cost to rid me of this fatal birthmark. Perhaps its removal may cause cureless deformity, or it may be that the stain goes deep as life itself. Besides, do we know that a possibility even exists of unclasping the grip of this little hand which was laid upon me before I came into the world?
What could you say?
I said what I believe, that I'm convinced of the perfect practicability of its removal. And then she said, Aylmer, let the attempt be made. Danger is nothing to me. Life is a burden while this hateful mark makes me the object of your horror and disgust. Aylmer, she said, remove this dreadful hand or take my wretched life.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and X-Lax. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
The preceding program furnished by CBS Radio. This is WOR New York. Stay tuned now for The Plain Truth with Garner Ted Armstrong.
The other day I was having a talk with my father, who had been stricken by a serious health problem at age 85. My dad had been suffering from some heart failure, what they call in modern terms congestive heart failure. Well, he went all the way down to about 20 pounds weight loss and was coming back up, making remarkable strides, and was actually sitting up and taking some solid food at his breakfast room when I came in to visit him, as I'd been doing repeatedly. He was eating some frozen yogurt. And I was reminded of a television commercial I have seen recently in which about five old guys, all of them centenarians, octogenarians and on up, over 100 years of age, were spooning away on this frozen yogurt. I brought it up to my dad in a discussion of longevity and the fact that our family has been quite long-lived, that his mother died at age 96, my mother's father at age 97, my Uncle Will, a great-uncle, at age 92, that my mother died of unnatural causes, and at the age of 75, that my father's already 85 and now coming along quite well and recuperating from a very serious health problem. I mentioned the fact that these fellows over there in that part of Soviet Russia, I guess it's either Azerbaijan or Soviet Georgia, are apparently living on a pretty simple diet. They live in a nomadic goat herd society. They eat goat's meat. They drink goat's milk. They eat the raw whole grain cereals, food grains like wheat and barley and oats and rice and whatnot. And at the same time, they do eat a lot of yogurt. Now, this was a company ad for frozen yogurt, which I am not trying to palm off on you at the moment, but I was talking with my father about this thing of longevity and about the problems that come along to cause us to worry about our health, about the enormous number of even younger persons in the United States who are suffering from hypertension, from overweight, from high blood pressure, and who are a walking heart attack waiting to happen, of the enormous number of even younger people who are coming up with all sorts of bizarre forms of cancer, at the number of women in the United States who feel so horribly betrayed when they suddenly check and find they have a lump in their breast and are so terribly worried about it, and how we in the United States of America, in spite of all of our vast technology, our knowledge and information, our tremendous outpouring of foodstuffs in our prepackaged, long shelf life, artificially preserved, flavored, and colored foods that we're ingesting by the billions of tons every single decade in this nation, are a sick generation. And we shouldn't be. We don't need to be. It maybe is indicative of our attention, our growing attention toward the health problem, of the number of slenderizing salons, of the number of gyms, the number of people out jogging, the increase in interest in sports such as tennis, golf, and bicycling, and that's all to the good. But unless you're also putting into your head the knowledge of the principles of healthful living, the basic laws of foodstuffs, of how to stay alive longer, maybe you're missing something. I know the TV ad that shows it's a shortcut to buy the salad dressing already made, to buy the food already prepackaged. Somebody else does it for you, freezes it, and you merely heat it up and serve it. But if you think for 1 minute it isn't far better for you to eat foodstuffs grown out of your own garden or grown from someone's garden fresh without the sprays, preservatives, and all the rest, you're mistaken. Food is living. The idea is that when you pluck it or pick it or shuck it or do something else to it, it's starting to die. It's starting to spoil. So the idea is you've got to eat it before it spoils. It's simple, but a lot of people never think of it that way. If you'll pick up the telephone and dial a toll-free number, we'll send you a free, colorfully illustrated booklet on principles of healthful living. It's 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225. The number for the rest is 800-423-4444 for a colorfully illustrated booklet, 5 chapters with an extensive bibliography about additional reading called Principles of Healthful Living. And it's absolutely free of charge. There is no cost. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
The preceding commentary was sponsored by Garner Ted Armstrong Productions.
Stay tuned now for What's Your Problem with Bernard Meltzer. The number to call is area code 212-391-2800.